a very good evening
Hello,
to you.
Warwick. Well, well. What'll you have?
What'll you have?
Okay. On you, then. I don't mind.
Fancy somewhere a bit quieter. Like over there in the corner. Got a story to tell you.
Oh?
Remember the story about Mendingham you told me? I've got as good a one to tell you. Been hoping I'd see you. Had it straight from the filly's mouth, so to speak. The usual? Frank, double scotches, two, please.
There's something ghoulish in your manner this evening, Warwick. You going to try and scare me?
Listen and see. Ever been to Borneo?
Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder, presents Beyond Midnight by Michael McCabe.
Okay, fire away. I'm all ears.
I won't make the obvious remark. One thing, my story, it isn't for sale. Well, what I mean is this. It's given today free, gratis, and for nothing, friend to friend. But you don't make 200 guineas out of it by selling
it. I'm not that hard up for a yarn yet, Warwick. Carry on. Interest me. Your story?
It's a wild tale. Two planters, interior of Borneo. And as usual, there's a woman. A veritable golden-haired filly, only her mane is streaked with grey. And there's a great livid scar or weal right round her neck. She's the wife of George Thring. At the other end of the triangle is Clifford Macy. The men were partners on a small experimental estate far up in the interior. They'd been at it for 6 years and were about to reap the fruits of their labours very handsomely. And then Thring went on home leave and came back with a bride. Her name was Rona, and that was the beginning of the trouble. Macy flirted, philandered, and then fell violently in love with her. Come here, Bert. Don't be scared.
What bird?
A bird. Why give it a name? A bird's a bird. Tree's a tree.
No, Peter. Just how strange. You've been here 6 years and you can't call a bird by its proper name. Is it a long-tailed cloppet or scarlet speckled ditch hopper? Have you a cigarette?
He's 45 miles away. It's all right.
All right for you.
He won't be back till tonight. We've got all the time in the world.
Peter.
I ought to plug that bird, oughtn't I? He messed up our little scene. All right, relax. Hey, you're sweating. What's... Oh, sorry, madam. Perspiring. But you can see I wasn't brought up like you. Decent with tablecloths and pretty china and a vicar to tea on Sundays. Oh, Rona.
You don't do things by halves, do you? When you drink, you want to fight. And when you love...
I go all out. Marry me, Rona.
I've already got one husband. I'm not a woman.
Oh, you know what I mean. Let's clear out.
Plantation.
The plantation can go and...
You'll be sorry tomorrow morning.
Never.
All that money. I like you, Peter.
Thanks.
And I know what to be friends with you.
Look, the other night on the river, that was more than friendship, Rona. Oh, the words you said then, the worlds we inhabited. Friends?
friends, yes, we were friends, but more. Or were you pretending, playing a game?
No. Yes, no. Peter, I don't know. I can't decide.
Well, that's too bad. You've got to.
Don't shout.
If I want to shout, I'll bally well shout.
Robin.
Are too busy sorting out their own love problems. Rona.
I want to finish my cigarette. Do you like a drink?
No, I don't want to finish your cigarette. I don't want a drink either. I want...
She fell between two stools, you see. So many women of a certain type do. She began by being just friendly and kind, cheering the lonely man up, and drifted into the eternal game of all womankind, flirting. And then? Well, too late she realized she couldn't put the fire out, either hers or Macy's. Thring was, in many ways, easygoing, but at the same time, possessed of a curiously intense strain of jealous possessiveness. He was generous, too. If asked, he would gladly give away his last shirt or crust. But let him think or feel that his rights were being taken or curtailed, and he was a tough customer with rather primitive ideas. Macy made no attempt to hide his feelings. The woman was sitting on a volcano. For her husband, of course, became suspicious. He watched, though, with the cunning of an iguana.
Rhoda?
You frightened me.
All right.
Oh, rain. Slowed down the work on the plantation, hasn't it? Will it lose us much money?
No, not much. You're not looking well.
Looking well?
I said not looking well. You know, darling, this rain is spell. It's getting us all down. Why don't you go home for a while?
Home?
Yes, my love, home. Hampshire in June. Can't you imagine it? It's only been 18 months. Long, cool evenings on the downs, the sea at Bournemouth, concerts at Portsmouth. Oh, Jack wrote to say the Royal Philharmonic is coming.
George.
Oh, you love music, Rona. There's no chance here. Only the gramophone.
Why should you think I want to go to England? No, it's just this eternal rain. I'll be all right when it's over. Well, the rain's a...
Darling, your health comes first.
Oh, my health is perfect.
You look pale. Then
you're... I've known you to be so solicitous, George. Why you...
Now, don't stay here out of duty to me, my dear.
Please. George, let's not talk about it anymore.
Ah, I see.
You see?
Borneo, the jungle. It's captivated you. Won you completely. You couldn't bear to be away from it. Is that it? England. Dreams of her rolling hills and green dells gone forever.
Oh, I wouldn't put it like that. I'd like to go home one day, but...
Or is it something else?
What?
Something else that you don't wish to leave at the moment.
George, I assure you, it's merely the weather...
Or someone else. Yes, that's it. My goodness, of course. How could I have been so blind? It's someone else. My poor little Rona. How you must be
George,
suffering.
I'm no mood for play acting. I'm going to bed.
Rona, please don't turn away. I'm talking to you. Rona? Rona, I said please do not walk away. Your husband is talking to you.
That's better. What's with you tonight? I won't keep you long, Angel,
but there is something I think we ought to sort out.
Well?
My darling, I am going to ask you a question. I have a little suspicion, you see. If I am wrong, I shall fall upon your feet and kiss them and be your slave forever and beg your forgiveness.
George, please, what is all this?
Are you having an affair with my partner, one Peter Macy? I'm sorry, darling, did I speak too softly? Perhaps you didn't hear me.
I said, George, you must be mad.
I have watched month after month. I have watched our worthy friend Macy become more openly amorous. I have seen secret glances. I have seen the way the looks that have passed
George,
between you.
True.
The looks have become less and less. Less guarded. Neither of you even care anymore. You treat me like an imbecile.
You're mad.
Admit it, Rona. Admit
no.
it.
No.
Admit it.
Leave me alone. I want to go to bed.
Admit that you've been deceiving me with Macy.
George, this has gone too far. All right, I'll go
to
bed.
Tell me.
Yes, yes, yes. We're lovers, yes. Been lovers for 4 months.
So, like a blithering and sublime little idiot, she admitted it was all true. And after the initial outburst, Thring took it like a lamb. In reality, he must have been burning mad, a mass of white-hot revenge. Unbeknown to either Rona or Peter Macy, he plotted his revenge. And it must surely go down in the annals of affairs such as this as one of the most diabolical ever contemplated. Came a lull before the storm. Fate played a hand. Macy went sick with malaria, really ill. And George Thring had to admit the necessity for Rona to nurse him practically night and day. Macy owed his recovery to her care. But even so, convalescence was a long job. In the end, Rona too crocked up through overwork, and Thring had them both on his hands. This was an opportunity better than he could have planned it. It separated the lovers and gave him complete control. The rains were over. The jungle had ceased wintering and spring was in the air. The young grass and vegetation were shooting into life, new life. Concurrently, all the creepy, crawly insect life of the jungle and plantation was young and vigorous and hungry, too. These facts gave the husband the germ of an idea which he was not slow to perfect. An idea as devilish as man could devise. In Borneo, there is a kind of a mammoth earwig.
A thing as fine and gossamer as a spider's web. As long as a good-sized caterpillar.
And it lives on waxy secretions. These are integral parts of some flowers and trees and lie buried deep in their recesses.
It's one of the terrors of these tropics. Because it moves and rests so lightly on a human being that one is practically unconscious of it. And, like its English relation, it has
a decided liking for the human ear. It was a terrible plan to put the giant earwig in Macy's hair just above the ear.
Once in his ear, it's a 1,000-to-1 chance against it ever coming out the same way. It would be impossible to turn. To back out would be an impossibility. And so, feeding as it goes, it would crawl right across inside the head.
Surely the rains aren't coming back again, George, are they? I didn't think I could bear it.
No. That's just the old storm having a last blow. It's all over. It's spring now.
Oh.
Don't worry, sweetheart. It's all over. Oh, well, I must go and minister to our other patient. Don't you want to know how he is?
How is he today? He should be pretty well recovered by now.
Oh, he is.
Said only yesterday he can't wait to get back to work. I must admit I shall be glad. There's a lot of work he's doing right now. This is the year when all our pains are awarded.
I think I'll get up tomorrow, George. I can take some of the burden from you. Must have been awful for you, having two invalids around the place.
Well, don't mention it. Those closest to me are sick. What am I to do?
Several days passed. Renathring began to nurse Macy in the last days of his recovery. It was late afternoon. Spring was really in, as they say. Borneo spring.
It'll be dark soon. Bats are about already. They're fruit bats, aren't they? And just light the lamps for you.
You care well for me, Rona. I wish I had you with me all the time.
Peter, don't say anything else about all that. We must try and forget now, because... What's the matter? Peter, what is it?
My head! My ear! Merciful heavens, my ear!
That was the beginning. Rona did all she could, but there was nothing to see, nothing to treat. Then for a while, Macy would be quiet, because the earwig was quiet. Then the vile thing would move or feed again, and... Spring came each day to Macy's bungalow. He was very helpful.
Here, drink this, old man. I think this is the best way to take the drug. It's foul without water.
Unbeknown to the wife, or the lover, of course, friend Thring had cast the dose of pain-relieving drug down the sink, and Macy was swallowing plain water.
This way it dissolves, and you can't even see it.
George, we've got to get a doctor.
I know, but... Well, you know how many miles that is away.
No, it's okay. It's just migraine. When I was a child, I used to have headaches. Wait. The doctor's too far. Miles and miles away. It's impossible. There's too much work here.
George, we'll have to get the labor in. We'll have to be carried down to the coast to the doctor.
Rona, come here a minute. Darling, we can't lose him. The malaria and this thing, he's not strong enough. Not yet. The moment he's gained a bit more strength, we will. But I promise you, it'd kill him if we took him now.
And so the work on the plantation went on. Rona nursed her former lover. Her husband went about the task of running the plantation. The laborers labored. The sun shone. And in the small darkened bungalow that was Macy's, its occupant lost weight and suffered the agonies of the damned. Gone now were all thoughts of love, illicit or otherwise. He could summon up no interest in the lovely, golden-haired woman who was constantly by his side. The drugs were having an effect, because, of course, when she administered them, she did the job properly. Strangely enough, Macy didn't connect the relief he felt when Rona gave him his drugs to a complete failure of those drugs when the husband played nursemaid. During the days that passed, an awful lot of creepy crawlies down the plantation drainage system must have died. Their supply of painkilling medicine must have been near to running out, too, when the end came. Again, it was late afternoon. Dusk was just falling. Bats were flying about, and they were heavy with fruit returning home.
I could die. Too much. Take it any longer.
Both Thring and Rona were present. Macy must have suffered an excruciating pain, followed by a period of quiescence. Then, feeling a slight tickling sensation on his cheek, he put up his hand to rub or scratch. His fingers came into contact with the earwig and its fine gossamer hairs. He naturally was curious and looked to see what he was holding. Slowly, he realized.
What an escape. What an escape.
Harry Thring kept quiet. And that, of course, was a mistake. This silence worried Macy, weak though he was. He looked from Rona to George Thring, and at the critical moment, George Thring could not meet his eyes. The truth was out. Macy threw the insect, now dead from the pressure of his fingers, from him, tried to rise, and then fell back. Slowly, George Thring walked to where the earwig had fallen, picked it up, and studiously examined it. And from his pocket, he produced a magnifying glass he used daily for the inspection and detection of leaf disease on certain plants. As Rona watched, she saw the fear and disappointment leave her husband's face to be replaced by a look of cunning and evil satisfaction. Then, for the first time, he spoke.
Macy.
Macy looked up. Thring held up the earwig.
This is dead now. As dead as my friendship for you. As dead as my love for that creature who was my wife. It's dead. Dead. But it's a female. Do you get me? This earwig is a female. And a female lays eggs. And before I put it in your hair, it was...
Touched your drink, cook, old man.
Huh? Oh. Oh. But what? I mean...
Oh, there was nothing anyone could say or do. Friend Macy made to get up and then fainted. Rona ran screaming from the bungalow. Her husband followed, snatching as he went a long Borneo native's knife from the wall. He caught her and slashed her, marked her neck. She's got the scar to this day. I think I'll have another whiskey.
Macy, I mean, what...
Well, he died, of course. No doctor could operate. The thing had laid eggs in his brain. Thring was tried for his murder. The wife, Rona, told everything to the authorities, but nothing was believed, of course. I mean, the story could never have happened, could it? She is a pretty wretched creature today. Her husband is hopelessly insane, so they say. Anyway, he's in the lunatic asylum for life. So... there it is. A waiter, two double whiskies and sodas, please.
Beyond Midnight, next week, we're broadcasting The Room. This is a rather frightening tale in the great tradition of ghost stories. The room in question is in the north wing of a house owned by a certain Mrs. Watts. The house has been in her family for many years, and the room in the north wing has a very terrible reputation. No one who has spent a night there has been found in the same condition as they went in when the door is opened the next morning. A duke, a well-known ghost hunter and dabbler in the supernatural, slept in the yellow room, and the results were terrifying. Before the great window was blocked in, one poor inmate jumped to the ground below to his death. Mrs. Watts herself has never dared spend more than a few minutes there. But she's an old woman now, and by her own admittance, she can't bear the thought of dying without knowing just what it is that haunts a person who spends a night in the room. Consequently, she offers £1,000, and Ronald Todd takes up the offer. The haunting of Ronald Todd is eerie and inexplicable. And at the very end of the story, there is a surprise which might anger and puzzle, but will certainly intrigue.
Beyond Midnight is presented every Friday night at 9:30 by Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder. The program is adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe.